The sun had been up for an hour when Frank, Conrad, and Rebel rode out of Lordsburg. Under normal circumstances, Frank would have considered that a late start to the day. But where Conrad was concerned, it was actually pretty early. So the time of their departure was a compromise, Frank supposed. Judging by the stiff backs of Conrad and Rebel, compromise was something that was going to be in short supply on this trip. Rebel wore jeans and had rolled up the sleeves of her man's checked shirt so that her tanned forearms were visible. Her hair was tucked up in her brown hat. The most colorful thing about her was the blue bandana that she wore knotted around her neck. Frank had bought another Winchester in Lordsburg, or rather, Conrad had, since he paid for it. The rifle now rode in the sheath, strapped to the saddle under Rebel's right leg. It was possible she might get separated from them, and now that he had decided to trust her, at least to an extent, Frank didn't want her to be unarmed in case she had to defend herself.
Those are the Mogollons right in front of us. Right, Frank?
That's them.
They looked pretty close.
They just looked that way because of the thin air. We're still a good distance away.
They had been following the rails already laid down by the work crew of the New Mexico, Rio Grande, and Oriental.
The work went well on this part. The trouble didn't really start until construction reached the mountains.
I'm not surprised. Hard to sneak up on anybody out here on these flats. There are a lot more places to hide in the mountains.
Conrad hadn't been happy when he found out that Frank had told Rebel about the problems that were taking them to Ophir, but he hadn't acted any surlier over that than over the simple fact that she was accompanying them. By now, he seemed to have gotten over some of his resentment. He and Rebel were talking together with grudging civility.
It should take us about 3 days to reach Ophir, but we ought to catch up to the construction crew sometime tomorrow.
You sound like you made this trip before.
I have. I've been to Ophir several times over the past year, checking on our mining operations. In fact, it was making the long journey by buggy that gave me the idea a rail line was needed.
You didn't tell me you'd been up here.
I didn't see that it made any difference.
Well, maybe it doesn't. But it's nice to know that if I need any information about the lay of the land, I can pick your brain.
You'd be better off picking someone else's brain. I always hired drivers and guards. I didn't pay much attention to where we were going, as long as we got there safely.
Well, I think when you're out here, it's always a good idea to pay attention to every little detail about your surroundings.
That evening, Frank chose a campsite in the foothills of the Mogollons.
Conrad, you and I'll take turns standing guard tonight.
I'll take the first watch. You get some sleep.
Sold.
Well, hey, what about me? I can take a turn.
That's okay. You go ahead and get a full night's sleep.
Huh. I see. You still don't fully trust me.
Rebel was right. As much as Frank was convinced that she no longer wanted to see the two of them dead, he wasn't ready to put them both completely at her mercy.
I'll climb these boulders here. They'll give me a nice view of everything.
Sounds right to me. Yell if you need me.
Well, since I can't be trusted, I might as well get to sleep too.
Conrad was right. From this vantage point, he could see Frank and Rebel below him, both of them snug in their bedrolls against the chill of night. Wolf lay stretched out next to Frank. Wolf was a steadfast friend to Frank, and Conrad wondered what that would be like.
Faithful companion.
Not to have a faithful pet, necessarily, but just to have a friend. Thinking back over his life, especially the past few years, he couldn't recall anyone who had been particularly close to him. There were the women who had thrown themselves at him, and the men who had chummed around with him at Harvard. But none of those were real friends. They had been drawn to Conrad because of his money. Conrad's gaze lingered on Frank. He could never think of the gunfighter as his father. Too much time had gone by when neither of them was even aware of the other's existence. But perhaps someday they could be friends, could feel a mutual respect for each other.
The famous drifter. Friends with a helpless tenderfoot. Not likely.
Conrad suddenly stiffened when he saw Rebel's empty bedroll. He hadn't even noticed her leaving. Alarmed, Conrad froze as he heard a sound near him, the scraping of a foot on the rock.
Conrad, wait! Don't shoot! It's just me!
What are you doing here? You're supposed to be sleeping.
I know. I couldn't go to sleep, so I thought I'd come up here and talk to you for a little while.
Really? I was under the impression that you didn't care for talking to me.
What gives you that idea?
Rebel's hip was close to Conrad's, but not quite touching. She would say anything, do anything, to get what she wanted, Conrad warned himself. He had to be careful.
If you don't want me up here, I'll go back down. I don't want to annoy you.
I didn't say that you annoy me.
You sort of act like it. Not only right now, but all the time.
You've misinterpreted my attitude. I have nothing against you. Well, other than that business of trying to kill us, of course.
Oh, I said I was sorry for that. Didn't you ever make a mistake, Conrad? Didn't you ever do something and wish later that you could take it back? Make things like it had never happened?
That's impossible.
I know that, but it's not impossible to forgive somebody.
Is that what you're doing? Asking for forgiveness?
Oh, what do you think I've been doing for the past couple of days? Don't you pay any attention to what's going on around you? Or do you just live in a world of your own all the time?
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
All right. If you don't notice what people say, maybe you'll notice this.
The kiss took Conrad by surprise. His eyes widened. And then, as if of their own accord, they closed. He gave himself over to the sensation of Rebel's sweet, hot, moist lips moving against his. Instinctively, he returned the pressure. When Rebel finally pulled her head back, he was breathless, and his heart pounded heavily in his chest, and he could feel the blood racing through his veins like a mountain stream cascading down from the high country.
Oh, my.
Damn right.
When they broke apart, Conrad felt as if he might never be able to breathe correctly again. A voice in the back of his brain shouted madly for him not to trust her. She was a seductress, a Jezebel,
If that don't convince you, I'm sorry. I don't know what will. But that's damned well as far as I'm going to go just to say I'm sorry.
Was that the only reason you kissed me? To say you were sorry?
Why else?
Well, I thought perhaps... I'm unsure how you feel toward me, Rebel. I don't know if you actually, well, like me, or if you just, enjoy,
I don't go around kissing fellas just for the fun of it, if that's what you're getting at.
Yes, I suppose it was.
And as for whether or not I like you, you're not the most likable sort in the world, Conrad Browning. You don't go out of your way to get anybody to like you. You just go your own way, and if anybody doesn't care for it, then to hell with them.
I'm accustomed to having a great deal of responsibility in the business world. I have to make important decisions and see that they're implemented properly.
You didn't decide I was going to kiss you. That just sort of happened.
Yes, it did.
And it didn't kill you either.
No, it most certainly didn't.
You see what I'm saying, Conrad? Just let things happen. You don't have to be in complete control all the time. Then folks might see you a little different.
You really think so?
I kissed you, didn't I? Oh, reckon I'll go back down there and try to get some sleep. Morning comes early in these parts.
You're leaving?
Why not? You have anything else you want to say? Or do?
No. No, I don't suppose I do. Good night, Rebel. I hope you get to sleep all right this time.
Thanks. Good night, Conrad.
Did she sound a little disappointed that he hadn't asked her to stay up here with him? Conrad wasn't sure. He started to call her as she began to climb down the rocks, started to ask her to come back, but he didn't, and a moment later she was gone. Conrad watched as she crawled back into her bedroll, pulled the blankets tight around her, and lay still. He couldn't tell for sure from where he was, of course, but he thought she went to sleep fairly quickly. At least he didn't have to worry about dozing off while he was on guard duty. After the things she had said and done, he had a feeling that he wasn't going to be sleeping anytime soon. The group was forced by the terrain to travel a good distance on the finished railroad tracks. The horses picked their way between the ties carefully. This was a treacherous portion of the trip. To their right was a sudden drop of about 40 feet onto the rocks below. Conrad and Rebel were unusually quiet today. They weren't sniping at each other as they often did. The night before, not long after Frank had turned in, he had roused from sleep enough to think that maybe he heard a pair of voices talking softly. Now he wondered if Conrad and Rebel had had a talk of some sort while Conrad was standing guard. Maybe they had worked things out between them. Frank hoped that was the case.
Hear that?
It would be difficult to miss such a sound. It was an explosion of some sort, wasn't it?
Yeah, we must be getting close to the railhead. That blast wasn't too far away. They're probably blasting out a tunnel or leveling a slope.
Frank, that didn't sound right.
Yeah, it was too big for a normal blast. Maybe somebody used too much dynamite.
Worried now, Frank got the Big Appaloosa moving again.
That's gunfire.
Yeah.
Then, with a pounding of hoofbeats, a rider came into view about 100 yards ahead of them, swinging around the curve of the mountainside. The man was running his horse recklessly. As he spotted the riders near the tracks ahead of him, he jerked up the gun in his hand and began to fire. Frank whipped out his Colt as a slug sizzled past his head. Another bullet struck a crosstie in front of Stormy and kicked up splinters. The Big Appaloosa stood steady, though, not spooked by the shots. The gun in Frank's hand came leveled, but before he could pull the trigger, the horse charging down the ledge suddenly faltered. Frank figured one of the animal's hooves had hit one of the crossties wrong, throwing it off stride. The horse frantically tried to regain its balance. The rider tried to bail out of the saddle to his right, away from the drop-off. He was too late. The out-of-control horse plunged over the edge, taking the rider with it. He was still in the saddle when the two of them struck the rocky slope about 30 feet down from the ledge. The impact separated them. Man and horse bounced off and fell the remaining 10 feet, landing on the rocks.
Oh! Oh my God!
Good Lord!
Grimly, Frank holstered his gun, knowing he wouldn't need it again. At least not right away.
Let's go take a look.
Are they dead?
Not sure.
Frank didn't hesitate. He turned to Stormy, pulled his Winchester from its saddle sheath, and drew a quick bead. And the injured horse fell silent. Rebel turned her face toward the rock wall for a moment, even though Frank knew she understood. She had been raised on a ranch, and she would be all too aware that sometimes a quick end was the greatest mercy.
What about the rider?
From the way his head is turned on his shoulders, I'd guess he's done for.
Who in blazes was he? Why was he shooting at us?
I don't know, but I got a hunch he's mixed up somehow with that last big blast we heard.
Frank turned to Stormy, replaced the Winchester, and took his rope off the saddle. He tied one end of it to the saddle horn.
What are you doing?
Gotta go down there and make sure he's dead.
Can't you tell that from here?
I'm pretty certain, but that's not good enough. Not when you're talking about a man's life.
You want me to hold Stormy's reins, Frank?
That's not necessary. He won't go anywhere.
Grasping the rope tightly, Frank stepped down off the ledge and began lowering himself, bracing his feet against the rocky slope as he let himself down. It didn't take long for him to reach the bottom.
Is he dead?
Yeah. Broken neck.
A search of the man's pockets turned up nothing except a double eagle and a few smaller coins.
Frank, somebody else is coming.
They're in a hurry too, Frank.
Frank took hold of the rope again and began walking up the steep slope. By the time he got to the top, a group of about a dozen riders had come around the shoulder of the mountain.
These men have no shortage of guns, do they?
Frank saw several rifles and shotguns, and nearly all of the men wore holstered revolvers. One of the pair in the front had the look of a leader about him. He was big and brawny, with wide shoulders and a blunt, sunburned face. Like the others, he wore canvas trousers, a flannel shirt, and lace-up work boots, rather than the higher-heeled riding boots such as Frank's. A fedora was jammed down on his thatch of rusty hair, instead of the wide-brimmed Stetson that would have been more common in this part of the country.
What happened? Did they fall off?
That's right. The hombre took a couple of shots at us first, but his horse lost its balance and went over before we had a chance to do anything.
Good riddance.
Might have been helpful if we'd gotten our hands on him before he died, though, so we could ask him who hired him to blow up our dynamite shed.
We heard the blast. Sounded like a whole shed full of dynamite going up, all right.
Who are you folks?
Sam, it's me, Conrad Browning.
It sure is. Didn't recognize you at first, Mr. Browning, in that cowboy getup. Don't suppose I ever saw you before except in a suit.
The man swung down from his saddle and strode forward to shake hands with Conrad.
Frank, this is Sam Brandt, my construction superintendent. Sam, meet Frank Morgan.
The drifter, eh? When Mr. Browning said he knew you and thought he could get you up here to give us a hand, I didn't know whether to believe him or not.
You can see for yourself that I was right.
Conrad nodded toward the dead man below.
You say he blew up our supply of dynamite?
All that was in the shed. We still have part of a case that we were using.
From the looks of him, and judging by the fact that he was ramrodding the construction of this spur line, Sam Brandt was an experienced railroad man. Even though their backgrounds were completely different, Frank felt an instinctive liking for him.
One of our boys saw him skulking around the shed and raised a yell, but it was too late. The shed blew, and that gent jumped on a horse that he had hidden in the brush and took off. I grabbed some of the men and came after him.
Ever seen him before?
Brandt cuffed his fedora back and hunkered on his heels at the edge of the roadbed to look down at the corpse.
No. No. If I ever saw him, I don't recall it. Looks like a bad sort, though, from what I can tell.
That is my impression, too. Like you said, it would have been nice to be able to question him.
Well, we won't have that chance, but it's just a matter of time until some other ball-peen tries something. We'll catch the next one and hold his feet to the fire.
You mean that metaphorically, of course.
Brandt turned his attention to Rebel and took his hat off, holding it over his heart.
I'm sorry, miss. I didn't mean to be ignoring you until now. Sam Brandt is the name, and I'm at your service.
This is Miss Callahan. She's traveling with us.
Escorting the lady to Ophir, huh? That's gentlemanly of you lads.
They are indeed gentlemen, Mr. Brandt.
Boys, you all head back up to camp. I'll be along shortly with Mr. Browning and his friends. You are heading for our camp, aren't you?
That's right. Seems like the best place to start, since you're obviously still having trouble.
That's for sure. This business today, blowing up the dynamite shed, is the first time anybody's tried anything in several days. But there have been problems off and on ever since the last time Mr. Browning was here. Why, it was only a week ago that somebody took potshots at one of my crews as they chopped wood for our cook stoves.
Have you seen any sign of the Indians?
The savages themselves, no. But we've seen their handiwork.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that three of our boys went out to hunt fresh meat a while back, and when they never came back to camp, we sent out a big, well-armed search party. Found their bodies about a mile up a canyon stuck full of arrows. Their scalps were gone, too.
We ran into Indian trouble, too.
I don't know why the army doesn't come in here and clean out those red heathens.
That's easier said than done. 15 years ago, Victorio and his braves led the army a merry chase through these very mountains. The soldiers never did catch him. He wound up being trapped and killed by the Mexican army down south of the border. In more recent times, it was Geronimo who had the soldier boys running around in circles, mostly over in Arizona territory. But it's not as simple as just sending in the army.
No, I suppose not. Still, it's their job to pacify the savages, and I don't know why they're not at least trying to do it.
I've spoken to some of the politicians in Washington, Sam, and they promised me that troops will be dispatched to this region as soon as they're available. Until that time comes, though, we're on our own.
Not entirely. We've got Frank Morgan to help us now.
I'll try not to let you down.
Well, come on, folks. I'll take you on up to the camp.
Will you be able to go ahead with construction without your supply of dynamite?
Well, like I said, we've got part of a case left, so we can carry on for a little while. We've rigged a temporary telegraph line between the camp and Lordsburg, so I'll wire down there and have several more cases of the stuff put on the next work train that comes up the line. It'll be here in a few days. So blowing up the shed shouldn't slow us down much. It'll just cost you some extra money to replace the lost dynamite, Mr. Browning.
I don't care about that. I can stand some added expenses, as long as construction carries on.
It'll do that. If you plan to stay around for a few days, you'll see for yourself.
I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do. I thought I might go on to Ophir and leave Frank at the camp to investigate. I'm afraid I wouldn't be much help at work like that.
Whatever you think is best.
He had thought that Conrad might want to remain at the camp, but it didn't surprise him that the young man was leaning toward going on to Ophir. Even though the settlement was a mining boomtown, it would offer more in the way of comfort and civilized amenities than a railroad construction camp. The tracks had crossed part of the valley, stopping at a wide gorge where a foaming, fast-flowing river brawled along at the bottom. The little creek that paralleled the tracks flowed into that stream just west of a partially completed trestle. There were also several freight and passenger cars parked along the tracks, as well as flat cars piled high with wooden cross ties and steel rails. Building a railroad took a lot of men, equipment, and material.
You want to spend the night here, at least, before you start on to Ophir. There's room for you in one of the cars where the foreman and I sleep. As for the lady...
Anywhere's fine with me, as long as I've got room to spread my bedroll.
I was about to say we can fix up a private compartment for you, ma'am.
Oh, I don't want you to go to any trouble, Mr. Brandt.
No trouble at all, ma'am.
Frank could tell that Rebel didn't cotton much to being called ma'am. It occurred to Frank to wonder, if Conrad did go on to Ophir, would Rebel stay here at the camp? Or would she go with him? That question could wait. For now, Frank had a job of his own to do. He was going to find out who was behind these attacks on the New Mexico, Rio Grande, and Oriental, and put a stop to them so that the rails could go on safely through the mountains. With any luck, maybe nobody else would have to die to make that dream a reality. Brandt introduced Frank to his assistants, the men who served as foremen of the various work gangs, and to Nathan Buckhalter, a surveyor and topographical engineer. Buckhalter had been in charge of the initial survey carried out long before construction even began, and he was the one who had determined the best route for the line to follow. If unforeseen difficulties forced any deviation from that route, Buckhalter was on hand to determine which way the railroad should go. Once Frank had met everyone, Brandt led him over to a blackened pit in the ground a couple of hundred yards from the camp. A few wisps of smoke still drifted up from the ugly crater.
This used to be our dynamite shed. You can see for yourself what happened when all the explosives stored there went up.
Good idea keeping the stuff this far away.
Yeah, that's just common sense around a construction area. And it's lucky that none of the men were close enough to get caught in the blast. Nobody was killed or even hurt.
How was the explosion set off?
You know, in all the confusion, I never did find out the details. Hank Willard here is the one to ask. He's the one who first saw that skunk who wound up falling off the ledge.
Willard was a short man with unusually muscular arms and shoulders. They had gotten that way from spending hours every day swinging the heavy maul that drove in the spikes, fastening the rails to the cross ties.
Begging your pardon, Mr. Morgan, but I've read plenty of them damn novels about you. I never thought I'd actually get to meet anybody so famous.
Well, you have to remember that all those stories are just made up.
You don't say? Oh, you mean you never met the Steam Man of the Prairie? Or tangled with Cal Marzeppi? Or shot it out with 500 bad men at once?
I don't reckon I'd still be here if any of that was true.
Well, now, they was good stories anyway.
Tell Mr. Morgan about what happened earlier, Hank.
Yeah, well, now, it was like this. I've been helping out with the trestle since we ain't actually laying any track right now. And one of the bosses sent me back to the tool car to fetch a saw blade to replace the one that busted. But when I got there, I seen somebody skulking around the dynamite shed. And I knew he hadn't ought to been there because we already had a case of the stuff down in the gorge. I seen him go in and I waited till he come out again, and when I got a better look at the way he was dressed, I knew he weren't no railroad man. He was more like a cowboy. Oh, no offense, Mr. Morgan.
None taken. What did you do then?
Well, I figured I'd better see what the fellow was up to, so I started over toward the shed, and he saw me coming and acted spooked. So I yelled at him to stay where he was. He didn't do it, though. He run off into the bushes, so I run after him.
And he had a horse hidden in the brush.
That's right, yeah. He jumped on a horse and it took off, and I was yelling at him, and about that time I noticed some sparks, and I seen a fuse leading into the shed, a-burning to beat the band. And I thought for a second I could run over there and stomp it out, and I even started in that direction, but then I seen the sparks going right into the shed. Hell, I knew I had better put some distance between me and it. Good thing I did, too, because a couple of seconds later, the whole shebang went up, knocked me right off of my feet, it did. When I got up, I seen Mr. Brandt and some of the boys running to find out what had happened, so I yelled to them about the fellow who got away, and they took off after him.
Willard paused and rasped his fingers over his beard-stubbled jaw.
I hear the gent's dead.
Yeah, he is.
Well, I ain't sorry to hear. I come near to getting blowed up, and it ain't a feeling I like.
You just saw the one man?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was alone.
There wasn't a guard on the dynamite shed?
There will be from now on, once we get a new one built. But before this, no, we didn't have one. Didn't think it was necessary. Nobody figured one of the bastards would sneak up so close to the camp like that to carry out his deviltry.
The shed sitting off by itself made it a little easier for him. And I suppose that during the day there wouldn't have been that many people around who might spot him. Everybody was working.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was just luck I was in the right place at the right time to see him sneaking off after he'd laid that fuse.
Well, we won't have any luck finding out where he came from. The ground here is too stony for his horse to have left prints.
Any ideas?
This sabotage today is a dead end. I'll figure out a schedule of guard duty for the camp, so it'll make it more difficult for anybody who doesn't belong here to come around. And I'll be scouting the area for any signs of the gang that's doing this. Also, I think you should send out some men to bring in that body. And Conrad can take it with him to Ophir, try to find out if anybody knows the man.
I'll tend to having him fetched in, Mr. Morgan.
That's another thing. If we're going to be working together, you might as well call me Frank.
All right. And I'm Sam.
Good enough, Sam.
Let's get on back. Supper will be ready soon, and our cooks turn out a pretty good venison stew.
As they walked away from the crater, Frank glanced back at the spot where the dynamite shed had stood. A thought had occurred to him, and he wondered how long that saboteur had been at work before Willard spotted him. Specifically, he wondered if the man might have stolen a case or two of the explosives before setting his fuse and blowing up the rest of the supply. The man hadn't had any dynamite with him when he took that fatal tumble off the ledge, but that didn't mean he couldn't have cached it somewhere before setting the fuse. Frank hoped that wasn't the case. The thought of a couple of cases of dynamite in the hands of men who wanted to stop the railroad put a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach. In the car that served as living quarters, Conrad supervised as a couple of the men rigged blankets across one end of the car to close it off and give Rebel some privacy.
There. That should do it.
There's no need to go to such trouble just for me.
Nonsense. A lady needs her privacy.
That's something nobody's accused me of very often. Being a lady, I mean.
Well, we're going to see to it that you're properly taken care of, so you might as well get used to it.
Oh, I reckon I might as well. Anyway, it might be nice to have folks fussing over me for a change. Lord knows my brothers never did. They just thought of me as another one of the boys. Just don't get in the habit of trying to spoil me, Conrad. Wherever I am and whatever I'm doing, I pull my weight.
Fine. And speaking of that, what are you going to do now? Are you going on to Ophir with me or staying here at the camp with Frank?
I figured I'm going with you. Frank can take care of himself.
Are you implying that I need someone to take care of me?
Well, you are a greenhorn out here.
I'll have you know I shot a man once.
Really? Did you kill him?
Well, no. But he was wounded rather severely.
Conrad didn't like to think about that incident, since he had gotten sick after taking part in the flurry of violence that had seen him use a gun against another man for the first time in his life. But even though he had reacted strongly afterward, he thought he had handled himself well enough during the fight itself. That was the way he remembered it, at least. He certainly didn't need a girl, even a frontier girl like Rebel, to protect him from bad men. On the other hand, the prospect of her accompanying him to Ophir was rather appealing in some ways. He hadn't forgotten those kisses.
I'm going with you anyway. You can protect me if you're so good with a gun.
It's my hope that neither one of us will need any protecting.
Yeah. That'd be downright lucky now, wouldn't it?
All right. We'll ride on in the morning, and I hope we can reach Ophir by tomorrow evening.
You know how to get there?
Yes. I followed the route several times. It won't be a problem.
It's settled, then. We'll get started in the morning. In the meantime, you think there's anything to eat around here? I'm getting mighty hungry.
One of the other cars was fitted out as a combination kitchen and dining car. The workmen lined up outside to get their bowls and plates filled. But Brandt, Buckhalter, and the other supervisors took their meals inside. Frank, Conrad, and Rebel joined them. They were seated at a cloth-covered table with bowls of stew already on it. There were glasses of wine for them as well. A welcome touch of civilization as far as Conrad was concerned.
Were you able to find any clues in what was left of that dynamite shed?
There wasn't anything left of it except a hole in the ground. And the ground's too hard to take prints. so I can't backtrack the hombre who set off the explosion. I hate to say it, but we may have to wait for the varmints to try something else and hope we can get a line on them then.
We can't afford too much more sabotage, or the project will grind to a complete halt.
I'm afraid you might be right about that, Mr. Browning. The men are already spooked, and having that shed blow up today isn't going to help matters any. A railroader knows when he signs up for a job that there's going to be dangers along the way. That just goes with the territory. But having to worry about being gunned down by snipers or riddled with arrows by Indians are just added problems, and our boys don't like it.
I don't blame them. You can spread the word if you want to that I'm gonna do my best to put a stop to all that.
That sure might help, Frank. Everybody knows your reputation.
Which is none too good in certain circles.
Frank shot him a narrow-eyed glance, and Conrad knew he had gone too far.
I done plenty of things I'm not proud of, but I never rode the Owl Hoot Trail, and folks know that about me, too.
Well, I'm sure you won't let us down. I reckon before you know it, the New Mexico, Rio Grande, and Oriental will be steaming right into Ophir.
Conrad hoped that was the case. Otherwise, before this was all over, he might be ruined. Frank could afford the losses, because Frank, well, because he just didn't care. But this project was the first big one Conrad had attempted on his own. It meant a great deal to him. So much, in fact, that he had been willing to go begging to his father for help. The next morning, Frank wasn't surprised when Rebel announced her intention of traveling on to Ophir with Conrad. She told him while they were alone briefly after breakfast, outside the dining car.
I hope that's all right with you. I know one reason I was traveling with you was so that I could try to talk some sense into Ed and Tom and Bob when they show up again. If I'm not here, I can't do that.
You talk like there's no doubt they'll try to kill me again.
There's not any doubt in my mind. I know Ed, and I know my brothers. Ed won't rest until he's avenged Simon and Judd, and he'll be able to talk Tom and Bob into going along with whatever he wants.
I don't think they'll bother me while I'm here in this camp. Too many people around for that. And to tell you the truth, I'm more worried about Conrad than I am about myself. So I'm sort of glad you want to go with him.
Oh, don't let him hear you say that. He gets a burr under his saddle whenever he thinks someone's saying that he can't take care of himself.
He's a prideful fella. Always has been, I suspect.
How long have you known him?
Oh, only a few years.
If Rebel heard the regret in his voice, she gave no sign of it.
Rebel has decided to accompany me to Ophir, Frank. I hope that's all right.
Fine by me. You mind taking the body of the hombre who blew up the shed into the settlement with you? You could turn him over to the local law, see if anybody recognizes him.
Sam Brandt walked up, in time to hear what Frank was saying, and frowned.
Sorry, Frank, but I've got bad news about that. The men I sent out to bring in that corpse told me that when they got there, the body was gone.
Gone?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. That polecat's partners must have shown up and taken his body away so that nobody could identify him. We should have brought him in when we had the chance.
Huh. Yeah, you're right. That's a possible lead lost. But there's nothing we can do about it now.
Except keep a close eye out for trouble, since we know for sure now that there are more of those scoundrels lurking up here in these mountains.
Miss Callahan and I are riding on into Ophir, Sam.
Are you sure that's a good idea, Mr. Browning? What with all the trouble going on around here, I mean?
We'll be perfectly fine.
Frank recognized that tone of voice. The quickest way to get Conrad to do something was to tell him that he shouldn't.
Sam, could you spare a few men to ride into town?
That's not necessary.
I'll go you one better. I actually need to send a couple of men to Ophir to bring back some supplies. That'll be quicker than wiring Lordsburg and having him set up on the work train.
You're just sending them along as caretakers.
No, sir. I was planning on doing that the next day or two, even before you arrived.
You're sure about that?
Positive.
Well, all right. I suppose, under the circumstances, it would be best for us all to travel together. I wouldn't want anything to happen to Miss Callahan.
Miss Callahan can take care of herself. Anyway, I told you I don't like being called that.
Let's just get the horses ready.
They were ready to leave a short time later. Frank shook hands with Conrad, and on an impulse, hugged Rebel. It seemed hard to believe that less than a week earlier she had been trying to kill them. Frank wondered fleetingly if he had been too quick to accept her change of heart. He didn't think so. He was willing to place a lot of faith in his ability to judge someone's character.
the two men you're sending with them, good men?
The two toughest railroaders I've got. And they're well armed. Each of them has a pistol and a rifle.
Well, Rebel has her Winchester. She can handle herself in a fight. As for Conrad, well, he can make a lot of noise with that Colt Lightning of his anyway. He might scare somebody off with it. He'll take care of posting guards around the camp?
Yeah, right away, Frank. What are you planning to do today?
Take a look around, get to know the lay of the land. I want to see if I can find any signs of a camp. Those saboteurs have to be staying somewhere when they're not causing trouble for the railroad.
Keep your eyes open. There are those Apaches to consider, too. And those red devils can hide in places where you wouldn't think that a flea could hide.
Oh, no. Wolf's pretty good at sniffing them out, though.
It's good to have a scout you can really trust.
None better, Sam. None better.
Frank spent the entire day riding in ever-widening circles around the construction camp, crossing and recrossing the river several times. It was a rugged but beautiful land, full of contrasts. Lush green pastures and towering pine trees in one place, and a mile away, nothing but bare, sun-blasted rock. Nowhere did Frank find the remains of a campfire or anything else to tell him that the gang of saboteurs had holed up there. He was frustrated, but tried not to let it bother him. There were countless places in these mountains where a group of men could hide. It would take a lone rider weeks, maybe even months, to search them all out. It would have been unreasonable to expect that he would find what he was looking for right away. Arriving back at camp a short time before dusk, Frank could tell from the atmosphere of the camp that there hadn't been any trouble during the day. A few men were still working, finishing up some final tasks before calling it a day. But most of the crew had already put away their tools and gone back to their tents to wash up.
Hi there, Mr. Morgan. Sam wanted me to be on the lookout for you. He said for me to send you over to the office car. He's waiting for you there. If it's okay, I'd love to take care of your horse for you. He's a great-looking animal. I'll rub him down real good. Make sure he gets enough feed and water.
Thanks, Hank. I'd be obliged. Been a long day in the saddle.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Mr. Morgan.
Please, call me Frank.
Yes, sir, Mr. Frank.
Not surprisingly, Frank found Sam Brandt going over some maps with Nathan Buckhalter and a couple of the other supervisors.
Glad to see you back, Frank. Did you find anything?
I'm afraid not, but I'll keep looking. From the way it seems around here, I assume nothing happened today?
Nothing but a heap of hard work. We were just figuring out how we were going to tie the trestle into the other side of the gorge. The approach isn't quite as easy over there as it is on this side, and we'll be reaching it in another few days. Once the structure's all in place, we can lay the track itself. That part won't take long. I'll be glad to get it done, too. It's taken us a while to make it this far.
That's one thing I did see today. You've done a real fine job getting this far, Sam.
Well, this gorge is the last remaining major physical obstacle between here and Ophir. We'll have to build a couple more small trestles, but nothing like this.
Well, y'all keep up the good work, and I'll try to do my part. Right now, I reckon I'll go get some supper, though.
We'll join you. Come on, boys. We can get back to racking our brains later.
Not as much meat in the stew tonight.
We're running low on fresh meat. Ever since the Apaches ambushed that hunting party, nobody wants to go out and look for deer.
I saw a few today, but I didn't think about you needing fresh meat. Tell you what, tomorrow when I go out scouting, I'll take my pack horse along with me. If I can down a buck, I'll load the carcass on the horse and bring it back with me.
Well, that sounds just fine, Frank. We'd be much obliged, that's for sure.
Night had fallen completely by the time they finished eating. As the men left the car, Brandt and Buckhalter and the others turned back toward the office car.
I think I'll take a walk around the camp, maybe check on the guards.
Good idea. We won't be turning in for a while anyway.
With a wave, Frank set off on his stroll. Wolf padded along beside him. Men with rifles had been stationed every 100 yards around the perimeter of the camp, standing guard duty in 4-hour shifts. Frank found himself at the edge of the gorge, west of the trestle, at the spot where the little creek flowed into the river. The slope below him was steep and choked with brush. Frank didn't think anybody would try to make their way through that thicket. But nothing was impossible, he supposed.
Easy. What do you hear, Wolf?
The big cur had heard or smelled something that bothered him. He stared intently toward the trestle. Frank looked the same direction, narrowing his eyes as he searched the shadows. After a moment, he caught his breath as he glimpsed movement on the framework of the giant bridge, far out from the edge of the gorge and almost at the top of the trestle. As hard as it was to believe, someone was climbing up the trestle from the bottom of the gorge. Hank Willard was the guard at the end of the trestle. When he heard somebody coming, he challenged him.
Who's there?
Frank Morgan. Somebody's out there on the trestle.
It can't be. Nobody came past me.
They climbed up from the bottom. Come with me, Hank. Wolf, stay here.
Obediently, Wolf sat down, but he was still growling and clearly didn't like being left behind. Frank and the guard started out onto the trestle. Their footsteps rang on the planks that made up the floor of the bridge, undoubtedly carrying a warning to whoever was skulking around out there, but there was nothing they could do about that. The gorge was about 500 feet wide, and the trestle already spanned more than half that width. Frank and the guard passed over the river, boiling and foaming along 100 feet below them. As they approached the end of the trestle, a dark shape suddenly rolled onto it from the side, pulling itself up and over the edge.
Look out!
Cold flame erupted from the black shape that crouched at the end of the trestle, blooming like a deadly crimson flower in the night. Earlier in the day, on the road to Ophir, Conrad and Rebel rode side by side, trailed by the two railroad workers who hung back about 50 yards. Conrad found himself wishing he was alone out here with her. That would have been quite pleasant, riding along under the vast blue dome of the western sky, with spectacularly beautiful mountain scenery all around them, accompanied only by this beautiful, independent, self-reliant young woman. Instead, Frank and Sam Brandt had sent along a couple of rough-hewn nursemaids. Conrad was still angry about it, but he realized it was a reasonable precaution, what with all the trouble that had been going on in the area.
What sort of place is Ophir?
It's a typical mining boomtown, I suppose.
Well, that's just it. I've never been to a mining boomtown. Our ranch was about halfway between Fort Davis and Marfa, and those just little cow towns. El Paso's the biggest city I've ever seen.
Ophir is nowhere near as big as El Paso. It's becoming a respectable-sized town, though. At first, there were only tents and a few rough shacks there, at least so I've been told, because I never visited the place while it was like that. But in recent months, people have begun to put up more substantial buildings. There are even a couple of brick buildings in town now. Ophir has three hotels and a newspaper and a number of stores and restaurants.
But what about saloons?
Yes, there are plenty of saloons, unfortunately. I suppose they're a necessary evil any place where you have a lot of men working as you do in the mines. They certainly pander to a rough element, though, and they contribute nearly all of the crime and the disturbances of the peace in the settlement.
What about whorehouses? Are there whorehouses in Ophir?
I'm sure I wouldn't know.
Well, maybe not from experience, but you're bound to have heard about them if they're there.
Of course, there's talk. I suppose there are places where a man can relieve himself of his more unnatural urges.
Oh, you think it's unnatural? I grew up on a ranch, and it seems like the most natural thing in the world to me.
It's not the same. A cow doesn't have to pay another cow to...
Oh, that's true. I never did see any money change hands or hooves.
This is the most absurd conversation. Can we possibly change the subject to...
I reckon it's different where men and women are concerned.
Of course it is. There has to be a certain amount of decorum involved. Without that, humans would find themselves descending to the same level as animals.
Oh, we wouldn't want that.
No, we wouldn't. It's our sense of right and wrong that sets us apart from the animals. And when we lose that, we've lost everything.
Oh, I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that. Animals may not know much about right and wrong, but they have a certain innocence about them, I reckon. They live their lives and take their pleasure where they find it, and they don't waste even a second worrying about what's proper or not, or what's tomorrow gonna bring. Whew, I think it would be nice if human folks could live like that for a while, but every now and then.
You're talking about anarchy.
I'm talking about doing what feels right, not what some set of rules allows or what some sour-faced preacher or politician says is right.
I'm sorry. I just can't imagine living that way, even for a short period of time.
Well, that's all right, Conrad. Not all of us are as stiff-necked as you are.
Conrad glanced over at her. The smile on her face took most of the sting out of her words. Most, but not all. He asked himself why her disapproval mattered one little bit to him. She was nothing more than a somewhat attractive annoyance. Well, more than somewhat attractive, he supposed, but still a definite annoyance. And not that long ago, she had been even worse than that. She had been an active danger to him and Frank. They had brought food with them and stopped for lunch next to a little pond formed by a spring that trickled out of a rugged rock wall. Conrad thought it was a pretty spot, but he didn't really pay that much attention to it. He talked to the two railroaders as he ate, asking them questions about the work on the spur line. The men seemed a little uncomfortable chewing the fat with the big boss, the owner of the line, so Conrad didn't press them on anything. He knew they would have a certain loyalty to Sam Brandt, and he didn't want to challenge that. He noticed after a while that Rebel had wandered off to the other side of the pond, which was about 100 feet across. She was standing there, tossing rocks into it. Conrad walked around to join her.
What are you doing over here by yourself?
Well, I didn't want to intrude on the conversation between you and your railroad men.
She picked up a rock and threw it a little harder than she had before. It skipped across the surface of the water.
It wouldn't have been an intrusion. I was just passing the time of day with those men.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt.
Are you feeling like I neglected you? My God, you can't be upset because I talked to them instead of you.
Ha! Don't flatter yourself, Mr. Browning.
I thought you were calling me Conrad.
Right now, Mr. Browning seems more like it.
Suit yourself.
You know what I'd like to do?
I have no earthly idea.
I'd like to take all my clothes off and go swimming in this pond.
Ugh! Good Lord! Have you felt that water? It's ice cold. You'd freeze to death.
I don't reckon I would. I've gone swimming without a stitch lots of times, even when it was cold. Once you jump in, you get used to it.
I don't think so.
You never did that? Took off all your clothes and jumped in?
He couldn't answer. An unwanted image appeared in his brain. He seemed to see Rebel standing there at the brink of the water, poised to dive in, divested of all her garments so that she was nude. In his mind's eye, he saw her arrow sleekly into the water, and as she came up, her hair would have darkened from being wet, and the cold would cause her nipples to grow hard and erect, turning into pebbled buds of brown flesh. He turned away abruptly and jerked around.
Conrad, what's wrong?
Nothing. Not a thing. Everything's fine.
Without turning around, he stalked off toward some nearby trees. He wasn't sure, but he thought he heard her laughing softly to herself as he strode away. After a while, Conrad was fit to ride again, and the group continued on toward Ophir. Rebel didn't say anything about the conversation they'd had beside the pond, and Conrad was grateful for that. He was convinced that she had known exactly what she was doing. She was upset with him because he had ignored her, and so she had punished him by planting that tantalizing but utterly improper image in his mind. It wasn't that he was a Puritan, though he had some in his family tree, or that he was unversed in the ways of the world. But Rebel had a boldness about her that was shocking. He put it down to the way she had been raised on the frontier without a proper grounding in the proprieties. Even if certain things were done, they certainly were not talked about.
I had hoped to reach Ophir by nightfall, but from the looks of it, that's not going to be the case.
You want to make camp, or would you rather push on after dark?
The trail is easy enough to follow, and I don't think it will take us more than another hour or so to reach Ophir. It makes more sense to push on.
You're the boss.
Conrad kept stealing glances at Rebel, and wondering whether or not she was still upset with him. She hadn't been very talkative this afternoon. That was all right with him. He was still thinking about the things she had said earlier, even though he didn't really want to dwell on them. His mind wouldn't let him forget the pictures it had conjured up. Still, he wasn't so distracted that he didn't hear the gunshot, or see the sudden spurt of dirt and rocks ahead of his horse as a bullet plowed into the ground. Conrad looked over at Rebel and saw that she had whipped her Winchester out of its sheath and was looking around for some sign of the bushwhackers.
Come on! Let's get out of here!
The two railroad men were already galloping toward Conrad and Rebel as fast as they could ride.
Yeah!
Conrad jabbed his heels into Inferno's flanks and sent the big black horse lunging forward. Rebel was right behind him on her chestnut gelding. She still hung onto her rifle in case she needed it.
Where are they?
I don't know! Keep riding hard!
Conrad thought it was much better to run than to fight. He leaned forward over his mount's neck, making himself a smaller target. A glance over his shoulder told him that Rebel was doing likewise. He didn't hear any more shots, but he wasn't sure if he would be able to over the rolling thunder of hoofbeats. Gradually, he became aware that he had pulled well ahead of the others. Inferno was running with efficient, powerful strides, carrying Conrad along faster than he had ever ridden before. He might have been frightened by that if he hadn't been so worried that he was about to be shot out of the saddle.
Whoa!
He began to pull back on the reins, trying to slow Inferno. The big black didn't respond, but kept running as swiftly as ever.
Conrad! Slow down!
I'm trying to, damn it!
Finally, the horse began to ease his pace. He was still running fast, but he was no longer pulling away from the others. They began to catch up.
Conrad, slow down! The shooting stopped!
I'm trying to!
Inferno fought him every step of the way, but gradually he managed to pull the horse down to a trot.
We got away from those damn dry gulchers. I saw them up on a ridge back there a ways.
I'm surprised you didn't shoot at them.
I thought about it. I was afraid you... I was afraid you were going to fall off that black devil and break your full neck. So I came after you instead. Oh, Lord, that big fellow yours can run. Those bushwhackers never had a chance to draw a bead on you.
Are you all right? You weren't hit?
No, I'm fine.
Are either of you men wounded?
We're all right, boss. Just a mite spooked.
You're not alone there, my friend.
That's the sort of thing that's been happening all the time lately. No wonder all the boys are scared.
Frank Morgan will find out who's responsible for this trouble and put a stop to it. That's why he came up here.
Sure hope you're right, boss.
Conrad's pulse was still pounding, but he wasn't as breathless now as he had been a few minutes earlier. That wild ride on Inferno's back had literally stolen his breath away.
We're still going on to Ophir. Now that we know some of the miscreants are around, it's more important than ever that we reach the settlement.
I'd like to line up one or two of them miscreants in the sights of my rifle.
With luck, it won't come to that.
You've got your kind of luck, and I've got mine.
That was all too true. Everything was different about them, Conrad told himself. It seemed unlikely there could ever be a true meeting of the minds between them, no matter how physically attractive he found her. Ophir was set in a valley between two peaks in the Mimbres Range. About an hour after dark, the four riders topped a ridge and were able to look down into the valley, where they saw the lights of the boomtown glittering invitingly.
There it is. We'll be there shortly.
Less than 15 minutes later, they reached the southern end of Gold Street, Ophir's main thoroughfare. The business district stretched for 5 blocks in front of them. The side streets were lined with tents, shacks, and in a few cases, more permanent dwellings that were so freshly built they still smelled of raw lumber. Music and revelry came from the saloons. Conrad was more interested in reaching the Holloway Hotel, where he always stayed when he was in Ophir.
Ooh, looks like a mighty lively place.
Yes, it's far from genteel.
Conrad!
As they passed one of the mercantile stores, Conrad heard his name called. He reined in and turned Inferno toward the boardwalk. A young woman with brown hair stepped up to the railing and waved. Conrad swung down from the saddle and stepped up to the boardwalk, holding onto his horse's reins. The young woman threw her arms around Conrad and kissed him hard on the mouth. Instinctively, Conrad embraced her as well.
Well, the gals sure know how to welcome a fella in this town. That a friend of yours, Conrad?
Carefully, Conrad broke the kiss and disengaged himself from the pretty brunette's arms. He looked around at Rebel. Her face was set in taut lines.
Yes, I suppose you could say that. Rebel, Allow me to present Miss Pamela Tarleton, my fiancé.
Frank felt as well as heard the sizzle of the bullet through the air as it passed within inches of his cheek. He heard the guard behind him cry out in pain as the slug thudded into flesh, but there was no time to turn around and check on him. The peacemaker in Frank's hand bucked and roared as he squeezed off a couple of shots. The man crouched at the end of the trestle, rocked backward as the bullet struck him, but he didn't fall. The shadowy figure managed to stand upright and fire again. This shot was wilder than the first, whining several feet over Frank's head. Frank triggered again, and this time the bullet burrowed deeply into the would-be killer's belly, doubling him over. He swayed back and forth for a second, and then toppled off the side of the trestle, pitching out into the empty air above the gorge, plummeting through the darkness to the rocky ground below.
Are you all... Never had a chance. Bullet got you right under the eye.
Frank! What happened? You all right?
Yeah, but I'm the lucky one here. This young fellow wasn't.
Oh, no. Danny.
He never knew what hit him.
What's happened? Is everyone okay?
They shot Danny. He's dead.
What happened, Frank?
Well, the guy laying on the rocks down there climbed up the trestle from the bottom of the gorge.
Climbed? From down there? Lord, I never thought anyone would try that.
That's not important now. What is important is what he was doing on the way up.
Well, what do you think it was, Frank?
I don't know, but I'm about to find out. Sam, get all your men back on solid ground. I'm going down to look around.
Right away, Frank. You men get back! Get off the trestle right now!
Hank, give me a hand. I won't leave Danny out here.
Okay, Sam.
What were you doing out here?
As Frank approached the point where the partially completed trestle stopped, he heard a hissing and sputtering sound.
Uh-oh. What have we here?
Dropping to a knee at the edge of the structure, he leaned out to peer down into the forest of support beams and cross pieces below him. The thick shadows under the trestle made the flaring sparks of a burning fuse all the more visible as they raced toward a wooden crate that had been wedged between a couple of cross pieces about 15 feet below the top of the structure.
Dynamite.
Get back! Dynamite! Get back!
Find a hole!
Get back!
Luckily for Frank, the saboteur had planted an extra long fuse to allow himself time to finish his climb and get to safety. Frank needed that extra time now. It seemed he had been running forever, and the end of the trestle still loomed in front of him, seeming to retreat instead of drawing closer. He knew it couldn't be much longer before the sparks reached the dynamite. The darkness was ripped apart by the sudden hellish flare of the blast. The roar pounded Frank's ears like giant fists, lifting him and throwing him forward. For a second, he felt like he was flying. But then he slammed into something hard and unyielding and tumbled over and over.
Oh, what the...
Somewhere in the dim recesses of his stunned brain, Frank was still thinking clearly enough to realize that the explosion had thrown him the rest of the way off the trestle, and he had landed on the ground at the edge of the gorge. For a moment or two, all Frank could do was lie there and try to catch his breath. A terrible ringing filled his ears. Something wet touched his face. His ears might not be working that well, but he could still see all right. In a reddish, flickering light, he saw Wolf's face close to his. The big cur was standing over him, licking his face.
It's all right, Wolf. It's all right, old boy.
At least, that's what he was trying to say. He couldn't even hear his own voice over the strident ringing that filled his skull. A cold feeling of horror struck him. Was he deaf? Was his hearing gone forever? Climbing unsteadily to his feet, Frank swung around so that he could look toward the trestle, or what was left of the trestle, which wasn't much. The explosion had torn a lot of it apart, and more of it had collapsed following the blast. What was left was on fire.
Come on, Wolf! Let's get out of here!
This time he heard the words he spoke, although they still sounded muffled and distorted.
Frank! You all right?
Yeah, but I'm afraid your trestle is done for.
It sure is.
Sorry, Sam.
The son of a bitch who planted the dynamite? You said you shot him and he fell off the far end?
That's right.
Then his body should be somewhere down below in the gorge. We'll have to find it and see if anybody recognizes him.
Yeah, and we'll do that tonight. This one won't get away from us after he's dead.
Hank, we've got to get this fire put out before it spreads to the camp.
Right away, boss.
I'm going down there to take a look.
I'll come with you. Things are gonna be all right up here, I think. Hank, we'll make sure the fire doesn't spread.
Bring a couple extra men if you can spare them.
No problem, Frank.
It was a grim-faced group of men that followed the trail down into the gorge with Brant's lantern lighting the way. They trooped across the temporary pontoon bridge, past the spot where the trestle had ended before the explosion, and then spread out a little to look for the body of the man who had planted the dynamite. Frank knew about where the saboteur had fallen, so it didn't take long to find him.
Over here! All right, let's see what you look like. Get that lantern closer. Anyone recognize him?
Say, that's Mike Lovejoy.
You know him?
Yeah, he worked for the line a while back when we first started building the spur north out of Lordsburg. He was a Gandhi dancer, but I fired him when he wouldn't do his job. Damn loafer.
Looks like he decided to get back at you and hooked up somehow with that gang that's trying to stop the spur line. Had he worked on trestles before?
Yeah, he'd been in the railroad business for a while, so I reckon he must have helped to build trestles before. It would take an experienced man to climb up there in the dark, especially carrying a case of dynamite. He had to know where to put it to do the most damage, too.
I was thinking the same thing, though I'm not surprised he used to work for you. Was he close friends with anybody else who's still part of the crew?
I don't really remember. Hey! Are you thinking that there might be other members of the Bunch still working against us from the inside?
It's a possibility.
I don't remember Lovejoy having any friends, let alone close ones. He was a prickly son of a bitch. Good worker, though, but only when he wanted to be.
The fact that he wasn't close to anyone doesn't mean there are no men in the crew who are really working for whoever's trying to stop us.
As if we didn't have enough to worry about already. Now we've got to be looking over our shoulders all the time, wondering if the fella behind us is really working for the enemy.
Frank turned his head and looked up at the wreckage of the trestle. Small fires still burned here and there, but most of the flames were out.
How long's this gonna set you back?
Well, no telling. Several weeks at least. Maybe a month or more.
But you can rebuild the trestle.
Sure. It'll just cost time and money and a heap of sweat, that's all.
The railroad could afford the time. There was no real hurry about getting the spur line to Ophir, although the sooner it was completed, the better. Frank thought that Conrad could probably afford the cost of rebuilding the trestle, too. But it was one more expense, one more disaster, pushing the New Mexico, Rio Grande, and Oriental that much closer to the edge of ruin. Conrad had asked Frank to come here so that he could stop that from happening. But so far, Frank thought bitterly, he wasn't one step closer to accomplishing that goal. Men had died, and havoc had been wreaked, and somewhere the mastermind behind all of it was laughing.